Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and now it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. The Boston Celtics are currently the favorite at plus 160, but the team that's third in my championship rankings, the Dallas Mavericks, you can get them on DraftKings right now at plus 1600 to win the title. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week so far. Day four of the NBA playoffs is officially in the books. We're going to keep it real simple tonight. Going to break down all three games from the perspective of both teams. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel so you don't miss any more of our videos. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT so you guys don't miss show announcements. Don't forget about my podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight if you're into more of the audio format. And last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in the YouTube comments. We're going to hit a mailbag later this week. All right, let's talk some basketball. So starting with Mavs Clippers, there's going to be a lot of talk about the end of that game and the surgical job that Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving did, not just navigating the slowdown half-court environment, but coming back from down six. I think it was the biggest lead was six. I think it was 79-73 is where the run started. And just methodically walking the Clippers down and getting buckets. Now, obviously, Luka and Kyrie were amazing offensively down the stretch. The shot making was ridiculous. Like, Luka hit that ridiculous step back three over James Harden. We all saw that one coming too, right? Like the dagger shot where Luka has his moment with the crowd. That's kind of like a staple of the Luka Doncic experience, right? That, I don't know about you guys, but did that not just remind you of playoff Luka that we didn't get to see last year, obviously, and some of the stuff we saw in the shot that he hit against the Jazz in what was a game three or game four in the 2022 run, or some of the shots that he hit against the Clippers. That's just a big part of the Luka experience, is hitting the dagger having a moment at the expense of the fans and the guy that that was guarding him. It's almost like on the road exclusively that he likes to do that too. Kyrie Irving had this kind of ridiculous, like, fake half spin back over his left shoulder hook shot slash floater thing that he hit along the baseline. That was nasty. They were targeting Harden a lot in switches, giving the Clippers a little bit of a taste of their own medicine. I thought, like, one of the key kind of elements of the end of the game was beating the Clippers' aggression. And I'm not even just talking about double teams, because, like, they were doubling. Luka posting up Russell Westbrook on the right block, you know, double from one pass away, easy kick out pass to Kyrie Irving, knocks down a three, right? Or a lot of, like, coming up high to the level of the screen and pick and roll to get Luka to get rid of the ball and just playing on the short roll in the 4-on-3 situations. But I thought it was also just aggression on the ball. There was a Russell Westbrook post-up, a Luka Doncic, where he tried to come up over in a three-quarter front to knock the ball away. And by the time Luka actually maintained got control of the basketball, he had inside position on Russ, which forced the defense to collapse. It was kick out. I think that one ended up in a P.J. Washington three in the left corner, if I remember correctly. Then there's one where he's going to work against Paul George, and Paul George is reaching in and trying to swipe away the basketball, and he kind of sort of knocks the ball loose for a second, but Luke is able to regain control and he works into the lane because now PG is on outside position and Luke is on inside position, goes inside, draws an extra defender, kick out pass to Maxi Kleber on the right wing. He knocks down a three. It was just beating the aggression that the Clippers were bringing. We know that that's going to be the Clippers' game plan in this series. They're going to try to force the non-Luka Kyrie guys to make shots, and they desperately needed somebody to hit a couple shots there down the stretch of that game, and ended up being PJ Washington for the most part. He had a bunch of buckets down the stretch. Maxi, like we talked about, hit that huge three on the right wing. As a matter of fact, Maxi Kleber and PJ Washington were 5 for 7 from three in this game. So one of our major adjustments we talked about after game one is really it's this simple. You got to beat the game plan with shot making on the weak side. They needed guys to hit shots. Maxi and PJ Washington stepped up and hit them. One of the things I talked about in our series preview, you Mavericks fans that watched that video will remember this. I saw this series tilting heavily towards a Maxi PJ front court. And we saw over the course of the series, started with Gafford. Obviously, we saw Jason Kidd go to Derek Lively to start the second half tonight. But the reality is they're not getting good enough defense or rim finishing from either of those guys to really justify playing them when Maxi and PJ are just better basketball players on both ends of the floor right now. And uniquely, like, one of the things that's nice about PJ and Maxi is they're not just forwards, they're big forwards. You know, I talk about the different archetypes of players, and like, you've got your kind of thin perimeter oriented forward, think like a Jaden McDaniels type of guy, right? But then you have your Derek Jones Jr. kind of fits that mold a little bit too, although I kind of look at him as more of like a hybrid guard wing. And by the way, he's the fifth guy in that lineup, right? And he's the guy that they're using to guard Paul George for the most part. But like, there's also that big forward position. This is like the Aaron Gordon, Rui Hachimura, PJ Washington, Maxi Kleber kind of thing, right? And when I look at guys like that, it's like they have some mobility. They can move around on the perimeter, but they also have the physical size to really, you know, deal with some of the physical stuff that you need to do inside, right? And if you're going to play small ball, if you're going to give yourself the flexibility to do the things that a small ball lineup can do, preferably you want two big forwards out there, right? Like, even if we go back and look at some of the great small ball teams of all time, like the Hamptons Five with the Golden State Warriors, right? It's kind of like three big forwards out there with Draymond Green, who's kind of more or less a big forward, and Kevin Durant and Andre Iguodala, right? Like, you need to be able to be small and quick and have offensive skill on the floor, but you also need to have like real size and athleticism on the front line. And I thought it was really interesting that the Clippers' first big win of this series, excuse me, the Mavericks, pardon my misspeaking there, the Mavericks' first big win of this series comes with them going down the stretch to the lineup that I called for in the series preview, which is PJ and Maxi with Derrick Jones. Dante Exum could theoretically be in that spot as well. And then Kyrie and Luka. And remember, in the regular season, albeit in a somewhat small sample size because it was a trade deadline kind of thing, that lineup was outscoring teams by like 19 points per 100 possessions. Any two forward combination with PJ Washington and Maxi Kleber on the floor were doing work. And so again, you know, it's kind of interesting because you remember when they made the Kyrie Irving trade? Those of you guys who have been around this show for a while, I was on a ski trip with my friends in Breckenridge when that trade went down. And I remember talking about how, because there was so much negative energy surrounding that trade when it happened, right? It was like they gave up, you know, like meaningful players, draft compensation, Dorian Finney-Smith. Like there was like a lot of negative energy surrounding that. And one of the things I said on the day of the trade, if you guys remember, I said, this is just step one. You get Kyrie first. You're obviously not going to have enough right away, right? But, and we saw that they ended up missing the playoffs last year. There was some bad basketball character stuff. Didn't love the way that Luka played down the stretch of the season, especially on the defensive end of the floor. There's some stuff there, but I don't think he really believed in that team for obvious reasons. They didn't have enough talent, but like, it's not about that. It was get your number two. Then you have a full off season and a trade deadline to fill out the pieces on the margins. Right. And we've seen Derrick Jones Jr. be like a super useful piece for them in this rotation, right? We've seen PJ Washington come back in the trade and be a super useful piece for them. You know, I talk about team building in three phases, right? You got to get your number one, a guy who's good enough to be the best player on a championship team. From there, step two is get a legitimate number two, preferably a guy who complements his skill set, preferably a guy who can play both ends of the floor, right? Those are your first two priorities. From there, find role players that can accentuate the skills and address the weaknesses of your stars. And they've just done a really nice job every step along the way, making the trade for Kyrie, getting a piece like Derrick Jones Jr. and some other guys that they got over the course of the offseason, even just the sign and trade for Grant Williams, which ended up being the vehicle with which they got PJ Washington. Get PJ Washington at the deadline. They followed that process to a T, and now they got themselves a damn good basketball team. As a matter of fact, the Indiana Pacers are more or less doing the same thing right now, right? They go and they get Pascal Siakam. They identified, hey, Tyrese Halliburton is clearly a guy that we think can be the best player on a championship team. Now, Tyrese hasn't really looked like what we expect from Tyrese since he hurt his hamstring, and I have not loved his lack of offensive aggression over the course of the last portion of the season, but part of that is Siakam being in the equation. But like, it was very clear, like, oh my goodness, this is one of the best shot creators in the NBA. We can build a championship team around this guy. We need to find a complementary star. So they found a guy who can defend and a guy that can get a bucket on an island and plays a position of need, that power forward position that they just didn't have on the roster. They were playing Obi Toppin to start the year. They figured that out. Probably not good enough to make a real championship run this year, but couple of smart moves this offseason and they could be right there in the mix. That's why I like this kind of pathway of team building. And we're seeing a good example of that with the Mavericks this year. Went on a random tangent there about team building, but we're going to get back to the game now. Okay. So I want to shift, the focus to Luka's defense, because again, most of the focus down the stretch of that game is, like I mentioned, the shot making, the over aggression from the Clippers, PJ and Maxi hitting shots, all that stuff. But there was a huge portion of this game that doesn't get talked about enough, and that's that, like, they just basically strangled the Clippers offense. And if you remember in game one, the primary focus of the Clippers was to try to get Luka Doncic on switches, right? And you know, it wasn't like Luka was giving up buckets on the switches that much. He was just getting burned off the dribble. And then, as we talk about, the worst form of compromising that you, or I should, let's try to rephrase this. The worst situation you can be in as a defense is to give up a straight line drive, right? Dribble penetration is kind of part of the game if you're set up for it, right? Dribble penetration and pick and roll when you're in a drop coverage, certain amount of that is expected. Dribble penetration when you're doing a weak side closeout and you close out on the high side and funnel someone towards the baseline. That's dribble penetration that you expect. But when you get beat off the dribble from the top of the key in a straight line drive and the guy's just flying downhill, it's just really, really difficult to handle. And that was a big part of how Zubac was getting going, just getting offensive rebound putbacks after guys were beating Luka off the dribble, right? So again, it wasn't, ironically, I talked about after that game that I wanted to see them go to a hedge and recover system. And again, with the hedge and recover, there are some other openings that exist there, but it's openings that you can plan for in your defensive rotations. But they didn't go that route. Luka just did a better job. Literally that simple. And again, he was given some space. Some guys got some decent pull-up jump shot looks over the top of him, but he contained dribble penetration, which is what you can live with, right? Like the pull-up jump shooting, even the best guys in the world aren't going to be that efficient with it, right? It's when you get in rotation and guys are getting wide open catch and shoot threes and wide open layups and dunks under the rim, that's when the efficiency equation tilts way out of favor for your defense. And so just by sliding his feet and containing the ball, he was able to kind of slow down that specific element of the Clippers' attack. And, you know, one of the things that Ty Lue does a lot is he'll lean into matchup attacking instead of, you know, more ball and player movement. And it kind of played directly into Dallas's strengths at that point. And again, it's not just Luka on the ball. There's just a lot of athleticism on the back line as well. And, you know, Luka just had the best season of his career defensively, and it wasn't really that much on the ball stuff. It was mostly help and recover type of stuff on the weak side. But I thought it was really interesting tonight that you saw that Luka's basketball IQ and his size and his length, he has the ability, as long as he squares up an offensive player, sits down in a defensive stance, anticipates directional changes, and beats guys to spots and absorbs contact in the chest, he can be a solid on-ball defender. And he showed you that tonight. I actually wanted to come back around to conditioning for a second because, you know, I've been really fascinated by this first 4 days of the NBA playoffs for a bunch of reasons. One of the main reasons why is home teams have been kicking ass. Like, first 2 days of last year's postseason, the road team won 4 of the 8 games. And it's interesting because the physicality we saw it pick up at the tail end of the regular season, I don't know about you guys, and if you disagree, I want to hear it in the comments, but like, I kind of feel like this year in the postseason even, it's been significantly more physical and intense and a tighter whistle even than what we saw last year in the postseason. It's like almost everything, including the regular season and the postseason, have been raised up a level in physicality and intensity. And I thought it was really interesting that through the first 13 postseason games up until the Mavs got a win tonight, home teams went 12-1, and the only team to get a win on the road was the Indiana Pacers, who are playing against a team that doesn't have their best player right now. And they were up 20-something in the fourth quarter, right? And I think it's just an example of, like, when these games get super physical, the home team, which can derive energy from the crowd, is able to kind of persist in that environment and make those extra efforts to a higher rate. But one of the big things that stood out to me is, like, everyone looks super tired. Everyone does. Stars, role players, everyone's got their hands on their knees. Guys are missing shots. So many stars have been inefficient. I mean, hell, even Luka and Kyrie by their standards have been inefficient. It's just super interesting to me. But I'm going to circle back around here because I thought it was super fascinating that down the stretch of this game, in game two, just 2 days removed from a really tough game where you kind of got your ass handed to you, Luka was playing both ends of the floor well. He had the lift to knock down that pull-up three over Harden. He had the lift to battle with Russell Westbrook in the post and to make reads as the Clippers were being aggressive. And he had the leg strength to slide his damn feet and contain the basketball on the other end of the floor. And it's just, I don't think we talk enough about conditioning as a part of greatness in what separates the best from the others. Like I've said a couple times over the course of the last few weeks, I think the three best players in the world right now are Jokic, number one, Luka, number two, and I think LeBron James is the third best basketball player right now that we're seeing playing. I don't think it's a coincidence that Luka is hitting big shots and making big offensive plays down the stretch of physical, intense playoff games when a lot of his peers are getting too tired and struggling. I don't think it's a coincidence that LeBron James last night is getting steals and run out dunks and hitting threes and hitting tough turnaround fadeaways and like somehow still having the energy when so many other guys are not. Or Jokic, who's just literally getting beat up on every possession and is required to do so much for Denver's offense, and he's walking down the best defensive player in the world and giving him easy buckets in crunch time of a very close game. Like, it's just super fascinating to me. I don't think we discuss it nearly enough in terms of like basketball player traits is one of the biggest things that sets Steph Curry apart from his peers when he was in his prime. Like, conditioning is just a very, very important part of your ability to thrive in these particular environments. And I think the super physical game has shined a light on that specifically. So salute to those three guys and several other players as well around the league that have been playing at a super high level. As far as the Clippers, not going to spend too much time on them tonight. I want to do we're going to do some film tomorrow. I actually already put together a film session for Suns Wolves that will hit tomorrow, but I'm going to hit a couple of other games tomorrow as well. But just really quickly on the Clippers, I thought Kawhi just looked obviously out of shape and out of rhythm. He made a bunch of defensive plays, but you could just tell he didn't have his lift on his jump shot. And then Russell Westbrook, obviously the field goal percentage isn't going to show it, but I thought just his overall athletic energy was a huge impact on this game. Rim pressure, creating easy looks around the rim and easy kick-out three-point shot looks, and then just kind of being a wrecking ball like he can be defensively from time to time. Also hit a huge three down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So shout out to Russell Westbrook. Again, we're going to dig into the film and take a look at what specifically went wrong for the Clippers offense tomorrow.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on to Suns Wolves. So this game, to me, came down to two big second-half runs because it was mostly a close game. It was 64-63 with about 5.5 minutes left in the third quarter. But we got two big runs, one in the late third quarter, led primarily by Anthony Edwards, and one in the early fourth quarter, led by Mike Conley. So I want to dig into each of those runs because I thought they were really interesting tactically, especially based on some of the stuff we talked about in the series preview. So it was 64-63 with 5.5 minutes left in the third. They get up to 70-63 with some free throws, and then Anthony Edwards hits that like super nasty sidestep pull-up jump shot over Kevin Durant, the long two there on the left wing, right? So it's 70-63. Then Drew Eubanks checks into the game. And what do we talk about is the coverage that the Suns are using in this series when Eubanks is on the floor, right? Everything with Ant is more aggressive. It's Nurkic at the level of the screen. And with Eubanks in particular, they're doing an even more aggressive version of that, which is a hedge. They're actually having him literally lunge out and cut off the driving lane before he recovers into the lane. So in a weird way, The high drop is a little bit more of a, like what Nurkic is doing, the high drop is a little bit more of like a windshield wiper type of rotation where the low man is making a read based on how high Nurkic needs to go out, and it's not quite as aggressive of a coverage. With the hedge, it's so aggressive that the pocket pass can get open and it could be a big problem pretty quickly. So they're tagging the roller aggressively to start the possession. And so especially in those specific coverages, Ant's passing is of vital importance for them to be able to beat that coverage. And as I talked about, the offensive pendulum for the Suns, or excuse me, for the Wolves in this series is going to center on Ant's playmaking and his pull-up shooting, right? Can he make tough pull-up jump shots over the top of multiple defenders like he did at the in game one? Or can he beat the coverage with the pass? And I thought he just did an amazing job beating the Suns hedge and recover with Eubanks in that third quarter stretch. Do you remember that Jaden McDaniels rip through on the baseline where he drifted underneath the basket and hit the like fadeaway like on the opposite side of the rim? That literally started with a hedge and recover that Ant beat with the skip pass. It was his read. He generated a 3-on-2 defensively, or 2-on-3, I should say, and he created a 3-on-2 on the weak side, and Jaden beat Kevin Durant on a closeout that was created by Ant's pass. Naz Reid, do you remember when Naz Reid caught at the top of the key and drove by Devin Booker and drew free throws right after that? That was literally a hedge and a tag with a kick back to Naz Reid, wide open at the top of the key. Devin Booker had to close out on him. And when he closed out on him, he was able to beat him off the dribble and draw foul shots. Once again, generated by Ant's playmaking. Nikhil Alexander-Walker's corner three in the left corner. Devin Booker, if I remember, I think Devin was the guy guarding Nikhil on that play. Devin Booker was way up, digging down into a driving lane in addition to the hedge and recover. It was like they were defending it like 4-on-2. And Ant just, instead of trying to force the action, just made the swing pass to Nikhil Alexander-Walker in the left corner, and he knocked down the three. They were all reads by Anthony Edwards. And again, like, it's just, we talked about the game plan coming into this series. If Ant can make the reads, if Mike Conley can score and pick and roll, and if the Wolves on defense can stay home off the ball and force them to the Suns to take and make really difficult contested twos, the Wolves are going to win. And that is exactly what they've done. But if Mike Conley can't score and pick and roll, if Ant can't make the reads and makes a bunch of bad decisions on the ball, and defensively they end up in rotation, the Suns are going to win. And we'll see if that pendulum swings back towards Phoenix when we get to Phoenix in game three. And honestly, I'm genuinely curious to see how this all goes with how bad the home teams have dominated so far through the first 4 days of the playoffs. Really curious to see if that shifts when we get into these game threes. But so far, Minnesota has won that battle. So Ant's playmaking in the third, let's move on to the fourth quarter. So in the fourth quarter, it was Mike Conley that went to work as a playmaker. But before we get into this, I want to go back in time for a minute to the second quarter. Because remember, the base coverage for Phoenix, when it comes to Conley, was very different than their coverage for Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is high drop with Nurkic with a tag, and it's a hedge with Eubanks with a tag, right? With Conley, they're trying to bait him into being a scorer and try to stay home off the ball. So they were having Nurkic sit way back in a deep drop, and they're just chasing him over the top of the screen. Well, in that second quarter, Mike Conley went on a hell of a scoring run in that, against that coverage, in his two-man game with Rudy Gobert, who, by the way, he has a bunch of credit chemistry with from their time together in Utah, and obviously a year and a half that they spent playing together now. Started off with a couple of floaters and a really difficult left-handed floater getting downhill to start that run in the second quarter. Then he hit another floater. That one was a little bit easier. There was an off-ball flare screen from Gobert on the right corner where Conley got a wide-open corner three. Remember, off-ball coverages actually have very similar principles to on-ball coverages. So in an on-ball drop coverage, right, Conley has the ball, guys chasing him over the top. Nurkic is sitting way back and basically waiting for him and containing both the roll man and the ball handler, right? That's exactly what happens in an off-ball screen. The difference is the ball is just in a passer at the top of the key. So passer at the top of the key, let's say Conley is on the right wing and Gobert sets a flare screen to him in the corner. Nurkic is in the exact same coverage. He's dropping to the short corner, and he's waiting for Conley to try to score between him. And if the screener slips, Gobert slips, Nurkic is there to handle both of them. So even though it was an off-ball play, it's more or less the same coverage. It's just set up in an off-ball configuration. Conley sinks that three in the corner. Then he gets a pull-up three on the right wing. Gobert screen. Grayson Allen dies on the screen. Conley comes off of it. Bam, hits that pull-up, patented pull-up three that he's been hitting his entire career, right on the right wing. Then he hits this like ridiculous up and under left-handed scoop shot. So he literally had 12 points as a scorer in that second quarter run, and all of them were against the deep drop coverage. Now, here's where it gets interesting. He did not make a field goal in the third quarter. Most of those shots were tough. The first floater was tough. The corner three was tough. He was like flying into the corner. The layup, the up and under layup was super tough. Only the second floater and the pull-up three were what I would qualify as easy shots. And honestly, it was on the on-ball guy for giving too much separation chasing over the top of the screens. So as we so when you factor in that they were tough shots and that he didn't make a field goal in the third quarter, that kind of sets the stage for this fourth quarter situation. So Vogel has a decision to make there. You either stick with the game plan and say, we just got to do a better job on ball. He hit some tough shots. He might be out of rhythm because he didn't score in the third quarter. Why don't we just stick with our deep drop coverage and see what happens, or make an adjustment? And Frank Vogel decided to make an adjustment, and it burned him. He ended up putting Nurkic in an aggressive high drop coverage, and then Conley immediately started picking them apart with the pocket pass to Gobert. First possession comes off the ball screen, high drop from Nurkic, easy pocket pass to Gobert. KD is way too slow, tagging on the back line. Gobert goes down the lane and dunks it. They're the very next time they run it, high drop, pocket pass to Gobert. Carl Towns cuts along the baseline. There's a tag of the roller. Carl Towns gets a layup. Jaden McDaniels got a wide open three on the left wing. Same sort of thing. High drop, pocket pass to Gobert, tag the roller, kick out to Jaden McDaniels on the left wing. He happened to miss that one, but as everyone was closing out at him, there was a long rebound to the right side of the floor, and Conley was standing there by himself, caught it in the right corner, and made the three that really was the dagger of this game. It put the Wolves up 13, and they never looked back. So, like, super, super interesting work from Conley and Ant in this game to beat the coverages that Phoenix was using. They baited Ant into his worst tendencies. He confronted them and he beat them with the pass. They baited Conley into his worst tendencies, passivity. He beat it with scoring, forced them to make an adjustment, which then unlocked his best trait, which is him as a playmaker, and he picked them apart. So shout out to Anthony Edwards and to Mike Conley. I thought they were the story of this game. They're the two primary initiators for Minnesota. The biggest rub on Minnesota this season has been their inability to score in the half court against elite defenses that load up on them, and they just got over that today and over the course of this series so far. And again, specifically in late game situations, Minnesota has been awful in slow down half-court environments at the end of these games, and it's been such a weak point, and they're just confronting it in this series, and they're beating it. I also want to shout out Jaden McDaniels. Another example of like how in this super physical and intense environment, it's been the athletes that have been thriving, driving closeouts. Like, he was just torching the Suns, specifically KD. And now KD is getting into help position and he's closing out. And like we talked about, you kind of have to with Jaden. And here's the thing. Jaden McDaniels was not a good closeout player this year. He was below 1 point per possession in spot up situations. He was like a low 40th percentile guy compared to his peers. He shot just 42% this year in spot up situations. He had 0 points in spot up situations in game one. He torched the Suns tonight, had 14 points just in spot up situations, shot 6 for 8 from the field. He's been an absolute athletic wrecking ball in this series. It's been one of the most interesting things that stood out to me through the first 4 days of the postseason. The real athletes have thrived, and the thin finesse players have really struggled. And I find that super interesting as the league kind of shifts towards a more physical environment. On the Suns front, They just really struggled to handle the physicality. They had 20 more turnovers tonight. They just start to get tired and then they get sloppy. They're up to 35 turnovers for the series. Their stars can't score efficiently in this environment, and they're still really struggling to get the defense in rotation. They have 68 made field goals so far in this series. They've only gotten assists on 35 of them. That's a 51% assist percentage. And remember, this team was 66% in assist percentage post All-Star break. It was one of the defining characteristics of them kind of achieving some of the high highs that they achieved down the stretch of the season. They're also just not generating any catch and shoot looks. Post All-Star break, they were generating 27 catch and shoot jump shots per game. That was the 12th most in the league. Very unlike the Phoenix team that we saw last year. So far in this series, total, they've generated 19 catch and shoot jump shots, just 9.5 per game. Or another way of looking at it, one third as many catch and shoot jump shot attempts as they were getting per game over the last chunk of the season post All-Star break. It is a major problem for them in this series. And it goes beyond the assist percentage. They're just not scoring. They're at a 98.9 offensive rating so far through two games. They were a top 10 offense in the regular season. Now, there's three things that I want to call attention to that are causing those problems. They're struggling to handle the physicality on drives. When they start to get downhill in the hands and everyone starts grabbing, they're falling over, they're losing their balance, they're not getting lift, they're losing control of the basketball. Two, they're turning the basketball over. Fatigue leading to sloppiness, and you'll see this in the film session. I have 20 clips that I'm going to show you guys in a film session tomorrow that kind of goes over some of these concepts. But they get tired and they make some really sloppy turnovers. Devin Booker had two really bad ones in the second half. Just threw the ball out of bounds on a swing pass to Bradley Beal. Tried to make a high post entry and just threw the ball right into Nikhil Alexander Walker's hands. That's not Devin Booker not being able to handle ball pressure. He's tired. And when he's tired, he's getting sloppy. And like, here's the thing. In physical games, the stronger team is usually the team that holds up better in terms of fatigue. And the Suns are just not the stronger team in this matchup. So, but by far the biggest problem they're having is they're just missing too many reads. And there's literally so many examples. And I'm going to, like I said, in the film session tomorrow, I'm going to give you guys a bunch of those examples. But I'm going to give you guys three examples tonight to just explain what I'm talking about. And these are all just in the first half. So there was a KD Grayson Allen ghost screen at the top of the key. KD has the ball. He's kind of like top of the key area. Grayson Allen standing on the right wing. Grayson Allen is being guarded by Mike Conley. Kevin Durant's being guarded by Karl Towns. Grayson Allen runs over to the right side of Kevin Durant to set a ball screen. When he does, we know what happens next, right? Conley hedges because he doesn't want to give up the drive to Kevin Durant, right? Because if he stays glued up to Grayson and he screens Kat, KD's just going to drive right around into the right-hand side to get to the rim. So the hedge, Mike Conley lunges out to cut off the drive, right? Grayson Allen slips it, goes to the left wing on the three-point line. He's wide open. KD throws him the pass. Mike Conley is closing out to his right-hand side. There is a baked-in driving lane. If he just catches and rips to the left, he has a baked-in driving lane that is almost certainly going to draw on another defender and is going to generate a closeout opportunity for Devin Booker or Bradley Beal. And those guys operating with a closeout are going to be hyper-efficient, not the inefficient scorers that they've been in this game. So what happens? Do you guys remember in game one where where Grayson Allen pump faked and got Jaden McDaniels off the floor, and instead of driving it, he just threw it back to KD? Did the exact same thing tonight. Has the catch, could rack left and draw the next defender. Instead, he just throws it right back to KD. And Karl Towns is right there. And now it's a straight static ISO against Karl Towns, and KD drives on him and has to settle for a really difficult, tough contested two that he misses. Why'd you even run the ghost screen? The whole purpose of the ghost screen is to generate the closeout opportunity for Grayson so that he can further the advantage for the next guy. That's why you run the action and you bailed on it and gave up the advantage. It makes literally no sense. You turned an action for a closeout into a tough contested two in ISO. The next one, Bradley Beal runs a double stagger. Yusuf Nurkic sets the first screen. Royce O'Neal sets the second screen. On the first screen, Nurkic rolls. Bradley Beal turns the corner and goes downhill. On the second screen, Royce O'Neal pops to the top of the key. All three Wolves go with Nurkic and Bradley Beal. Royce O'Neal is standing wide open at the top of the key. Bradley Beal's not even getting ball pressured at this point. All he has to do is whip it back over his shoulder to Royce O'Neal. He's either shooting a catch-and-shoot three or someone's closing out at him, and he can either make an extra pass or drive the closeout to operate in an advantage situation where he can generate another closeout opportunity for Devin Booker or Bradley Beal. Instead, Bradley Beal looks off Royce O'Neal, drags the pick-and-roll way down to the baseline, peels Gobert off in a switch, and then attacks Gobert in a switch and settles for an impossible step through like floater shot that has like almost no chance of going in, and he misses it. That's just bad process. And then lastly, later on in the first half, they run a guard screen with Royce O'Neal that gets Monty Morris switched on to Devin Booker. Devin Booker's thinking, okay, I have a size advantage. I'm going to post him up like that. Backs him down, gets into the lane. We start to set up a situation where the Wolves zone up on the backside. So Bradley Beal clears out and goes to the right corner. His man is Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards completely ignores Bradley Beal and literally goes and stands right underneath the basket. Okay? So now Drew Eubanks sets what's called a pin-in flare on, I believe, Gobert on the baseline. I think it was Karl Towns, actually, at this point. The pin-in flare, again, is all he's doing is making it so that if Devin Booker decides to throw that skip pass to Bradley Beal, who's wide open in the corner, if Cat tries to close out, Eubanks is there to screen him. Eubanks is literally set up. He's positioned himself right between Cat and Bradley Beal in the corner. It's cleanly set up to generate a wide open catch and shoot three for Bradley Beal, who's been deadly in catch and shoot 3-point situations all season long. And instead of making the pass, and you can literally see on the video a clear window for the pass, instead of making the pass, Devin Booker settled for not an impossible quality shot for Booker, I guess, but in a super physical game like this where they can't make shots, it's a much lower percentage, much lower value shot. Takes a left shoulder fade over Monty Morris and misses it. And again, I'm not saying you don't take those shots. You work on those shots for a reason. They serve a very important purpose in basketball games for rescue possessions, coverage beaters, and late game situations. There's a reason why you work on those shots. But what made the Suns a great team down the stretch of the season was advantage basketball. Getting guys into advantage situations because they're way more efficient attacking a closeout versus attacking a set defender. And they've played directly into Minnesota's hands in this series. And again, you guys are going to see the examples when we get into the film tomorrow. But like, I was watching that today and I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're losing sight of exactly what made you great, and you're playing into the lesser version of yourself, and you're allowing a team in Minnesota that has some weaknesses that you can attack to play to their strengths, and now you're down 2-0 and you haven't had a decent chance to win either of these games. Suns are in some real trouble, and they're going to have to flip that dynamic when they get home, and it all starts with decision-making from their stars.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on to Pacers-Bucks. Jump shooting was the major story of this game. You guys remember in Game 1, I talked about how the Bucks are a top-5 team in the NBA in allowing jump shots, and the Pacers are a top-5 team in the NBA in converting jump shots into points, and they just could not make them in Game 1. As a matter of fact, they got 0.77 points per jump shot in Game 1. Well, they shot like the Pacers today and then some. They had 1.22 points per jump shot, so basically damn near doubled up their jump shot efficiency from the last game, and it just completely changed the dynamic. Bunch of key guys got going. Miles Turner was hitting his threes in pick and pop and in spot up situations. Very key for the game plan, because remember, the Bucks are basically going to concede those to protect the rim, right? And so Miles Turner hitting those shots is important to burn the coverage. Siakam hit three threes. Aaron Nesmith hit three threes. Tyrese Halliburton hit three threes. So like, just getting that jump shot result back into to the ballpark of what you expect from the Pacers, it got them engaged defensively. They started to play like the Pacers in general. They were pushing off of makes and misses. How many times did you see, like, you know, there was a play where in the first half, if I remember correctly, where Brook Lopez like makes a layup, but kind of like trips and falls over. And you just see the Pacers go like, he's down, let's go. And on a made basket, they push up the floor, and Brook gets up and he's sprinting back. But Siakam just kind of like navigates and finds a little opening, and Tyrese hits him and he makes the layup on the other end. It might've been Obi Toppin, I can't remember exactly, but they were just running on makes and misses and getting out. They got out in transition on 20% of their possessions in this game. And then they finally got control of Damian Lillard. Remember, I talked a lot in Game 1 about how some of the jump shot result you kind of have to live with. Dame is a superstar, and he's capable of making tough contested pull-up threes. And to Dame's credit, tip the cap to him, he's been hitting those shots through two games. And like, I'm sure Pacers fans have felt a certain amount of like fear and hopelessness surrounding Dame and just his supreme talent. And that has been on full display through two games. But the bigger problem they were having in the first game was not the pull-up threes, but rather the dribble penetration. As Dame was coming off these ball screens, the big guy in the high drop, whether it was Siakam or Miles Turner or whoever it was, or Jalen Smith, he was just beating that guy off the dribble, and the Pacers had no backside help at that point. He was getting layup after layup after foul. He got four layups in the restricted area, drew a foul and got to the foul line there. Like, he just was killing them in that specific situation. Well, they cut his restricted area finishing in half in this game, and they finally slowed him down in the second half. He was just 3-for-9 from the field. So shout out to the Pacers for finally getting control of the situation defensively. And then Pascal Siakam, he just gave them that patented mid-range shot making that is so desperately needed when you get into the postseason. He's been getting close to the rim and taking short-range jump shots. And again, I talk about this a lot, but like, mid-range jump shooting, a lot of times it's when you get out past 15 feet that the actual efficiency metrics tank. When you're inside of 15 feet, they actually turn into shots that you can hit 60-65% of the time if you're a really, really good pull-up shooter, right? Like, that's kind of the story with Jokic. The reason why he's so damn efficient is the majority of the shots that he takes as over-the-top shot-making shots are inside of 15 feet. And so they're floaters and push shots and short turnarounds, and they're just shots that he can hit at an extremely high rate. And like, you're seeing that value from Pascal Siakam. In fact, he's 8-for-13 from the mid-range in this series so far. He hit so many big shots tonight, including some huge ones in the fourth quarter when they blew the game open. Talked about this in the Mavericks segment, but for the people who, the Pacers fans who check this out as a breakout clip, I'm going to just kind of go over it again. Like, I really like this approach to team building. Talked about it with Dallas, but they went and got Kyrie Irving. And in the process, they kind of gutted their roster, right? And it caused a problem. They missed the playoffs last year, right? But then in the offseason, or in the offseason, they got Derrick Jones Jr. and they got Grant Williams. Then they used Grant Williams at the deadline to flip to get PJ Washington. All of a sudden, they put together some quality role players around their number one Luka and their number two Kyrie Irving. And now you're seeing a team that is the first team, not counting the Pacers, who are going against a team without their best player in Giannis, but the first team to win against a full strength team on the road in the playoffs so far this year. So like, you're seeing the reward of that kind of team building approach. And it was clear what happened this year with the Pacers, the exact same thing. Tyrese Halliburton went on that crazy run to start the year where he was like 24 points and I think like 12, 13 assists and shooting 50, 40, 90. And it became clear like, oh, Tyrese is one of the top five offensive engines in the NBA, like already. Like, this is insane. This guy is clearly capable of being a guy we build around to win a championship. And so what did they do at the deadline? Exactly what the Mavs did last year. They gave up a couple of really good players, right? Giving up Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield was such an important part of this team with his ghost screen game with Tyrese Halliburton. Obviously, Bruce Brown was their best, like, kind of like athlete wrecking ball in the backing court. They gave those guys up and they got in Pascal Siakam, a complimentary star that is good at the things that Halliburton's not as good at, like being that defensive forward, being that on an island scorer, although Tyrese before his hamstring injury was an awesome on an island scorer too. But like, I love it because now it's like, not only do you have this good team this year that's fun and has a decent chance to make it out of the first round and will have a fighting chance in that second round series against whether, depending on whether or not it's the Knicks or the Sixers, right? But like, they have this chance, and then going into the offseason, they can look at it and be like, all right, we got our one, Tyrese. We got our two, Pascal Siakam. Let's find some complementary role players that kind of tie this whole thing together and make a run from there. And just Siakam, I don't think you could have, I mean, Pacers fans, are you not just completely thrilled with the production you've got out of Siakam through two games? But the Pacers did what they needed to do tonight. They played to their advantages. They used their speed to spread Milwaukee out, keep them on their heels. They defended better. They made their jump shots, and they got out of there with a win. If they can go get game three at home and they go up 2-1 before Giannis gets back, I think they'll win the series. But if they drop game three, they could be in some trouble. But I do believe they'll win game three. That's going to be the big one. And again, I'm going to be really curious to see just in general some of the trends surrounding the home teams when we shift back to the lower seeds being at home. All right, guys, that is all I have for tonight. As always, I sincerely appreciate you guys for rocking with me and supporting the show. We'll be back tomorrow with some film breakdowns. And then obviously, we're actually taking tomorrow night off because we have a relatively light slate. If I remember correctly, it's Celtics Heat, which is the biggest favorite in the first round. And then it's, I think it's Thunder Pelicans is the second game. We will cover those games on Thursday morning's show, but we're going to take that as an opportunity to take a night. I'm going to actually hang out with my wife. Been putting her through hell for the last four nights as she comes home every night from work and I'm just working. So I'm going to spend some time with her and then we'll get back to it on Thursday morning and then again on Thursday night for the night slate that night. So again, I appreciate you guys for rocking with me. I will see you tomorrow morning.
Of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.